Welcome to the Republican Professor. I'm your host, Dr. Lucas J. Mather. And we're back with the final installment, as promised, of the striking down of the mask mandate by a Trump-appointed judge. Yes. We're going to finish today, guys. We're on page 43. And I want to say a little bit about why we're doing this. Why do I go through court decisions on the Republican Professor podcast? Why take the time to do that? What's the pedagogical reason for that, if any? There's actually multiple pedagogical techniques and reasons behind such a use of TRP resources. It's not haphazard. Let me tell you about one of them. We do things the long way on the Republican Professor podcast, at least sometimes, to illustrate what the long way looks like. How long does it take to read through and understand a district court or an appeals court or a Supreme Court decision? As an example of a kind of government record, government documentation of an issue that becomes effective policy in the United States. How long does that take? Well, why would it be interesting to know that? It has to do with attention span. Let me tell you what I mean by that. How long does it take you to understand just one issue in American politics from one angle? Namely, here we have a district court decision. That's a federal court decision. So it's the judicial branch angle in our separation of powers republic. How long? Well, I'm illustrating that it takes a long time. It takes quite a bit of time. And we're not like, goofing off here. We're working through these decisions and reading through things. It takes a while. You might have to concentrate. You might find yourself wandering, your mind is wandering. There's educational benefit for you to know that. If it takes that much time for us and for you, well, there's a pretty good chance it takes that much time for someone else, for other people. And that's what I'm trying to get at here, is the more laws that we have, the more stuff that government tries to do, the more stuff it tries to fix for you. And this is an example where the government tried to fix something, but the fixing was worse than the problem. And then now you have to keep track of how that was fixed also by the government, the court. It's a lot to keep track of. But the more that the government tries to do, the harder it is for you to keep track of what they're doing and why, and whether it was a good idea. And there's a tendency among the electorate to say, well, I'm not supposed to, it's not me to do that. Other people will read that. Really, which other people? Lawyers. Lawyers will do it. Which lawyers? How do you know they're doing a good job? Well, because they, they them, they have the same attention span issues as you do. And if you're paying attention to my other episodes, grade inflation is an issue with lawyers as well. Law students. There's a book called The Year of Magical Thinking by Joan Didion, and you're engaging in magical thinking right now. If you think other people will take care of that. Yeah, it'll all work out. That, it's kind of feeling, it'll be taken care of. If that was the case, we wouldn't have any problems, but we do. And who's in charge in American politics? Well, if you're part of the electorate, you are. And if you're totally checked out about how long it takes to do even basic checking up with the government, we're worse off. Because the idea that someone else take care of it, someone else will take care of it, someone else will do it. Someone else will understand these things. And then nobody else does. And pretty soon it's so complicated, nobody can keep up with it. No group can keep up with it. And you can't keep up with what they're keeping up with, and you can't keep them accountable. So we have this tendency in American politics to want the government to solve all our problems, and someone else will take care of it. And what about when the government becomes a problem? Well, someone else will take care of that. So I'm being Mr. Miyagi and you're Daniel-san, and we're doing things the long way, wax on, wax off, and you have no idea, but you're becoming stronger and more resistant to bull crap. Part of the bull crap comes from within you, that someone else will do it, that I don't need to understand these things. I don't need to know how long it takes. This is a waste of time. Pretty much these are the feelings that kids are ingesting, and next thing you know, they have AI writing their papers for them. I don't need to do that. I don't need to develop my own thoughts on anything. Someone else will do that for me. That's where we're headed. What do I mean by that's where we're headed? That's where we are. And if you want to avoid that, you have to do the heavy lifting. You got to get in there, get off your duff, and do some hard things. Hard things. Things that take a long time. You got to do it the long way. You got to tell other people to appreciate doing it the long way. And I live it. I live it. I've spent a lot of time in law libraries. I don't I'm working when I'm there, but I'm also noticing law students. And let me tell you, when I look around at law students these days in the law library, I'm scared for our future. I don't know what else to say about that. I'm scared for our future. I'll develop that a later if you want. Shoot, when I go around in the regular library, I'm scared. All those resources that go unused. It's like we have an entire people group that have no idea what resources they have. They're consumed by other things. It's sad. So here we go. The mask mandate's failure to provide notice and comment was not harmless error. Page 43. When courts review agency action, they apply the rule of prejudicial error. That's US 5 USC 706. That's the APA. That's the Administrative Procedures Act 706. In other words, a court should not set aside an agency action unless an administrative error was harmful. But that rule applies only when a mistake of the administrative body is one that clearly had no bearing on the procedure used or the substance of the decision reached. And an agency's complete failure to comply with administrative procedures requires only a minimal showing of prejudice to defeat a claim of harmless error. Since the CDC's failure to use notice and comment here plainly affected the procedure used, the court cannot assume that there was no prejudice to plaintiffs. Indeed, the entire premise of notice and comment requirements is that an agency's decision making may be affected by concerns aired by interested parties. As a result, an utter failure to comply with notice and comment cannot be considered harmless if there is any uncertainty at all as to the effect of that failure. Plaintiffs provide at least a minimal showing that they were prejudiced by the lack of notice and comment. Specifically, they contest the studies and resources that the CDC relied upon and point to other resources that the CDC did not consider. Plaintiffs Pope and Daza, as individuals, page 45, who are at risk of anxiety or panic attacks while wearing masks. Don't you love it that this court is paying attention? This court is only paying attention because President Trump appointed this person who has the character to pay attention. And this person was confirmed by a Republican Senate, and that Republican Senate had the character to appoint someone who pays attention to both sides of an issue on this mask thing. Remember, it was always just one side. You're going to save lives when you have that on your face. You're going to save lives. What about the health challenges from wearing the mask? This Republican judge is paying attention to both sides of that issue. As individuals who are at risk of anxiety or panic attacks while wearing masks were well positioned to contest the scope of the mandate's medical exemption. And of course, plaintiffs would have challenged, could have challenged, the CDC's legal basis for regulating private conduct under the threat of criminal penalties through Section 264A. If you don't remember what Section 264A is, look back at our last episode. We covered that in detail. Had to do with the definition of terms. Thus, plaintiffs have presented enough to show that on remand, they can mount a credible challenge to the mandate and were thus prejudiced by the absence of an opportunity to do so before. What are we even talking about again here? Notice and comment. How many times have I said notice and comment? Remember, what the government, Biden, when it says government, talking about Biden, the Biden White House, the Biden CDC, Remember? They bypass notice and comment in issuing this rule. Notice and comment is required. You're required to get feedback about the impact of the rule from regulated parties, which would be everybody in the United States. And in this case, they said, "Ah, we don't want to do that. We don't want to hear from you about something that affects you. We don't want to hear the other side of it. There's one side, there's our side, and that's the way it is, and that's where it's going to be going forward." That's what the Biden administration was doing. Well, I there's another side in it, and it hurts people. We don't want to hear about it. Shut up. That was Democrats versus Republicans on this issue, and we're documenting it for posterity going forward, because it's not just this issue. It's a lot of issues. A lot of issues.
Like what?
Well, like every Second Amendment case ever. But I know I talk about the Second Amendment quite often. Okay. Quite a few First Amendment cases, but those are the famous ones. They get a lot of press. You know, Christians are all over the religious liberty, you know, and they get a lot of press. Can the football coach pray on the football field? You know, okay. I'm not even talking about that, guys. I'm talking about other stuff that you're not paying attention to. There was a case that Judge Kavanaugh was on at the DC Circuit involving the EPA. This is just an example. It's one example of many that I could give. And you don't challenge me, because I will give you many. I will give you as many as you can handle. This case about the EPA. I mean, I remember I was reading it in one of those law books in the library, in the law library, in the book. I wasn't reading it online like these students. Yeah, I was reading it in the actual book, had it in my lap, had it on the table. And the issue was, and it's not just one case, by the way, so I could give you the cases if you want to chase this down. Just ask me in the comments and I'll reply to you. I'll track it down. The issue was whether the EPA, in doing a cost benefit analysis of a rule regulating, I believe it was emissions or something like that, whether the EPA had to look at costs as well as benefits in a cost benefit analysis. And Judge Kavanaugh said, you have to look at costs too, as well as benefits for your rule when you do a cost benefit analysis. I mean, you have a federal judge telling a federal agency that a cost benefit analysis requires both sides of that, not only the benefits, but the costs. Yes, that's where we were. Yes, under Obama. That's what was happening. Republican judge saying, the whole idea of a cost benefit analysis is you don't just look at the benefits of your rule that you want to impose on everybody. And that was EPA. It had nothing to do with public health per se. It had to do with regulation of the environment. The environment, as if it's just one thing, the environment. You walk outside and you're like, the environment. There it is. Well, didn't I just describe to you the entire public health panic in 2020? The government policies? They were cost-benefit analysis that only looked at the benefits of government action, not the costs. And now we look back, what do we think about the costs? They were high, but they weren't considered along with the benefits at the time of the government action. And I'm telling you, I've seen in federal court decisions at the DC Circuit, which is the circuit that oversees the like things like the EPA and stuff like that, typically. Government agencies in DC, where you have a federal judge, a Republican judge saying, I mean, it's like it's embarrassing for me as I'm reading it. It's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed for our way of life, our government, that, and these are all college educated people. And this federal judge, who's a Republican, is telling these Democrats running a federal agency that the whole concept of a cost benefit analysis involves, costs as well as benefits. And you have to do both if it's a cost benefit analysis, because otherwise it's just a benefit analysis. I mean, that's such a basic point. It's embarrassing for me to point it out. And if you're not embarrassed for our government and our way of life and our people, you should be. What's wrong with you? We're producing people coming out of college, coming out of law school that don't even know what a cost-benefit analysis is. It involves cost as well. And they want to run your life, your life. They want to run your civilization. What could possibly go wrong? Should you even, like I just did one on grade inflation. Did you watch that episode? Did you listen to it? College students can't even read anymore under Democrat watch. It's on their watch. I was in the Navy, and whatever happened on your watch was your responsibility. Let's continue. I don't even remember where I left off. I'm on page 45. The government's blithe dismissal aside, the court may not so lightly conclude that public input would have been inconsequential in a rule directly regulating individual conduct. By the way, did you know that if you Google individual liberty, constitutional statesmanship, which is what we're doing here. This is about individual liberty in our constitutional republic. We're doing constitutional statesmanship right here. Did you know that if you Googled that, it's very difficult to rank on Google searches for topics like that? People pay lots of money for SEO analysis and manipulation, that search engine optimization. I've paid zero money, zero, for ranking on individual liberty, constitutional statesmanship. And yet somehow I made it into the top three pages of Google search on that. In fact, I didn't just make it in the top three pages. I made it on the top page, the number one page on the Google search results. By the way, Google's run by Democrats. Not only am I on the first page of the search results for individual liberty, constitutional statesmanship, I'm the number one search result in the world on that. I got there by doing things the long way, not by paying somebody else money to get me on that ranking. But I just did it by paying attention. Pay attention. It's your civilization, it's your country, it's your life. It's your nation. It's your culture. You're a part of it. If you want to take responsibility, you should. It's on your watch. You're a voter. You're part of the electorate. Take some responsibility here. We're talking about government regulation of individual conduct. Democrats usually only pay attention to that when it has something to do with how they express themselves with their so-called sexuality. Section 553 is designed to ensure that effective parties have an opportunity to participate in and influence agency decision-making at an early stage. The Democrats also say that this is a democracy. And here they are blocking notice and comment. They're blocking notice and comment by the people. Pay attention, guys. Pay a freaking attention. We're getting it on the record, man. We're getting it on the record. The CDC's decision denied plaintiffs and the public the opportunity to affect the outcome. They're willing to do that for that. What else are they willing to do it for? You want to play that game? It's not a game. But more than outcomes are at stake. Process matters too. Notice and comment requirements are not mere procedural niceties. Oh, I love this judge. Page 46. The essential purpose of notice and comment is to reintroduce public participation and fairness to affected parties after governmental authority has been delegated to unrepresentative agencies. He sounds really angry. Maybe I am. The government's response obscures that. And its behavior denied it, even aside from plaintiffs showing that alone is prejudicial error. Since the CDC issued the mask mandate without observance of procedure required by law, the court must hold it unlawful and set it aside. 5 U.S. Code, Section 706(2). Oh, that is a beautiful thing. C. The mask mandate is arbitrary and capricious because the CDC failed to adequately explain its reasoning. Sounds like a college term paper. Failed to adequately explain its reasoning. The APA sets forth the procedures by which federal agencies are accountable to the public and their actions subject to review by the courts. It requires agencies engage in reasoned decision making. Page 46, now 47. When they fail to do so, courts must set aside their actions as arbitrary or capricious. 5 U.S. Code, Section 706(2). Plaintiffs raise three arguments on why the mask mandate was arbitrary and capricious. First, plaintiffs argue that the mandate failed to comply with 42 CFR, Section 770.2. Second, the mandate was substantively unreasonable. That, there you go. And third, that the mandate failed to adequately explain the CDC's reasoning. That's even worse, man. Can't even explain your own reasoning? Well, just trust us, man. Why do I need to wear this cloth diaper over my face? Just because, because we're Democrats and we care about stuff, and like it's like the cool thing to do, man. You should just do it, man. Like, I don't need to explain my reasoning, man. And by the way, I don't care about your comment, man. That's what happened. I should wear this cloth diaper over my face because of that. What about science? Well, like, it is science, and like, we're just gonna say that. It's science, man. We're just gonna repeat that, and that's like our reasoning, man. That actually happened. You're talking about the highest level of government, the White House. You ever heard of the White House? The freaking White House, dude. I mean, it's different. Like, if the White House is making a decision about how to engage with a foreign nation, I can understand that they don't want to explain their reasoning publicly for that. It involves different personalities and sensitive topics. But this is not that. This is regulation of domestic private behavior and regulation of private business at a significant expense to the economy and people's well-being. And to have such a cavalier attitude towards something so important is quite frightening. And if you're not frightened, I'm frightened of you. There's something wrong with you. I would say get that checked out, but there might be something wrong with whoever checks you out too. So they might screw you up even further. They might ask you to wear a mask in the waiting room. Wow. Because the court agrees with plaintiffs that the CDC failed to adequately explain its reasoning, the court need not address whether the substantive decisions embodied in the mandate were themselves arbitrary or capricious, or whether the mandate violated 42 CFR 70.2. The APA's arbitrary and capricious review is narrow. The court may not substitute its judgment for the judgment of the agency. Instead, the court is limited to ensuring that an agency's exercise of discretion was both reasonable and reasonably explained. How's that supposed to work, by the way? I have questions about that. I mean, aren't you effectively substituting your judgment for the agency if the agency doesn't think reasonability is required in law? An agency decision is reasonably explained when the agency demonstrates that it engaged in reasonably reasoned decision making. To do so, the agency must examine the relevant data and articulate a satisfactory explanation for its actions, including rational connection between facts found and the choice made. This is the lowest bar of evaluation of a government agency action. The articulated rationale must also be adequate to explain all major aspects of the decision. While courts uphold a decision of less than ideal clarity, if the agency's path may reasonably be discerned, they may not supply a reasoned basis for the agency's action that the agency itself has not given. Although a closer question than the failure to properly invoke a good cause exemption, the mask mandate fails this reasoned explanation standard. Beyond the primary decision to impose a mask requirement, the mask mandate provides little or no explanation for the CDC's choices. That is what tyrants do in history. They don't explain. They just force you to do stuff. And if they do explain, it's not reasonable, and they don't care it's not reasonable. It's amazing to me so many people got on board with this. It's just really amazing to me. Although a closer question than the failure to properly invoke the good cause exemption, the mask mandate fails this reasoned explanation standard. Beyond the primary decision to impose a mask mandate, the mandate provides little or no explanation for the CDC's choices. Specifically, the CDC omits explanation for rejecting alternatives and for its system of ex exceptions. Yeah, you got to explain the exceptions. If you have exceptions, well, why these exceptions and not others? And there are many, such as that the overall efficiency of masking on airplanes or other conveyances could reasonably be questioned. The mandate does not address alternative or supplementary requirements to masking, such as testing, temperature checks, occupancy limits in transit hubs and conveyances. It does not explain why all masks, homemade and medical grade, are sufficient. She's paying attention, man. Nor does it require social distancing or frequent hand washing, despite finding these effective strategies for reducing COVID-19 transmission. And actually, even social distancing was called into question because that was just made up too. Of course, the CDC did not need to explore every alternative device and thought convenience by the mind of man, but an agency must consider and explain its rejection of reasonably obvious or significant and viable alternatives, even if these alternatives were not so obvious that the CDC had to explain its decision to reject them. The mandate fails to explain other significant choices. For example, the mandate relies on studies explaining that universal masking reduces transmission of COVID-19 at the community level, but the mandate does not require universal masking. It exempts individuals who are eating, drinking, or taking medication, and a person who is experiencing difficulty breathing or who is feeling winded. That last one, I should have used that more often. It also excludes individuals who cannot wear a mask due to an ADA recognized disability and all children under 2 years old. The mandate makes no effort to explain why its purposes, prevention and transmission of serious illness, allows for such exemptions. She's just, man, she's just nailing this. Nor why a 2-year-old is less likely to transmit COVID-19 than a 62-year-old. The CDC does not articulate a satisfactory explanation or any explanation at all for its action and fails to include a rational connection between the facts found and the choices made. Page 50. Instead, it simply announces the exceptions. That's what tyrants do. Now, here's the exceptions. You can't bear arms. Here's some exceptions, randomly. And we reserve the right to alter that at any time. The government disagrees, asserting that the CDC is entitled to strong deference on the scientific, medical, and policy issues underlying the mask mandate. True enough, agency decisions on such line-drawing questions as whether a newborn or 3-year-old child must wear a mask are entitled to considerable deference. So too, that wide discretion applies to the CDC's decision to limit medical exemptions to the ADA's definition of disability. But while the CDC is not required to identify the optimal threshold, it is required to identify the standard and explain its relationship to the underlying regulatory concerns. The same deference and explanation formula applies to agency decisions involving scientific uncertainty. When an agency is obliged to make policy judgments based on limited data, courts grant substantial deference to agency judgments. But courts must still ensure that the agency states its policy judgment and goes on to identify considerations it found persuasive in reaching that judgment. The CDC did not do that here. In other words, the most basic requirements for a rational conversation were missing with the CDC. Effectively, they were saying, public, shut up. Here's the policy, here's the exceptions. There's not really any rationale. See ya. Obey. That's what they did. In the same way, agencies are permitted to rely on their experience in the regulated field in crafting rules, but only so long as they explain what their experience is and how that experience informs the agency's conclusion. Sounds reasonable to me. If the CDC relied on its experience in deciding, for example, that an exception for 2-year-olds was an acceptable compromise, while an extension to 3-year-olds would not be, the CDC did not say so. In sum, irrespective of whether the CDC made a good or accurate decision, it needed to explain why it acted as it did. Now, why do they need to do that? Goes back to freaking the ancients. What makes human beings human beings? The ancient Greek philosophers said it's our ability to speak and reason. We justify our actions. We feel like we have the need and we have the ability to have a discussion about why we're doing what we're doing and why that's better than the alternatives, and receive feedback on that and dialogue that says, have you considered this? It's through speech, logos, reasoning. That's where we get the word logic. That's where we get the root of lots of our academic disciplines, by bio logos, biology. That logos, it's speaking, it's reasoning, it's articulating, justifying our conclusions about living things and how we got there. How did we get to those conclusions? Anthropology, same thing. Sociology, not economics. But you see the logos root in many academic disciplines like theology. You think that about God? Why? Tell me your reasons. Articulate an argument. Let me hear, you'll hear my reasons. We'll talk about it. We'll dialogue. That's called theology when we're talking and reasoning about God. Theos means God. Bios means life. Biology, theology, etc. Anthropology. Anthropos means human. When we're reasoning about the nature of human beings, human civilization, human culture. It's really basic, guys. And she's saying, and the Republican judge is saying, don't forget that. It's not a great idea. It's required. By the way, this is filed April 18th, 2022. Over two, how long after that freaking rule? It's like a 14 months that you have to wait 15 months. And we would have been waiting longer if it wasn't for Trump appointing her and the Republican Senate confirming her.
You always make this about politics.
Well, it is called the Republican Professor, so sue me. I mean, it's right there in the name, so how can you complain? All right. Where did I stop here? Since the CDC did not explain its decision to compromise the effectiveness of its mandate by including exceptions or its decision to limit those exceptions, the court cannot conclude that the CDC articulated a rational connection between the facts found and the choices made. And so the decision is arbitrary and capricious and due to be set aside and remanded to the agency. The government disagrees. Shocker. Asserting that the CDC must have considered the question of medical exemptions and the age cutoff because it granted some exceptions, this argument understates the agency's burden, page 52. The agency must consider the essential aspects of the problem and act reasonably, as the government claims that the CDC did. That is necessary, but not sufficient alone. It must also explain its decision with enough particularity that a reviewing court can determine that it used its discretion appropriately. The CDC did not do that. It didn't even try to explain. And the court may only consider the grounds that the agency invoked when it took the action. An agency must defend its actions based on the reasons it gave when it acted. The government may not supply post hoc rationalizations. In other words, you can't come up with the reason afterward. So, too, the reviewing court should not attempt itself to make up for deficiencies in the agency's explanation of its rule and may not supply a reasoned basis for the agency's action that the agency itself has not given. Without a contemporaneous explanation, the court cannot conclude that the CDC reasonably considered the relevant issues and reasonably explained the decision. Accordingly, the mandate is due to be set aside as arbitrary and capricious. The mandate is vacated for violating the APA. As explained above, the mask mandate exceeds the CDC's statutory authority and violates the APA. Plaintiffs ask the court to declare it unlawful and set it aside. This remedy mirrors the relief they sought in their amended complaint. The government argues that plaintiff's relief is limited to a declaratory judgment, and even if other relief is awarded, it should be limited to non-enforcement of mask mandate against the plaintiffs. Man, these guys are a real piece of work. Holy cow, this Biden team, this Biden White House team is a real piece of work, man. The APA requires that courts hold unlawful and set aside agency action that violate the APA or exceed the agency's authority. 5 U.S. Code Section 706, that's the Administrative Procedures Act. Courts have long interpreted this provision as authorizing vacatur. Indeed, vacatur is the ordinary APA remedy. That means vacating the whole rule for the whole country. It's not that hard to supply. I mean, it's what she's saying is you guys are idiots. You deserve to lose. Such a stupid rule. Vacatur only ordinarily applies to the rule generally, not just to the plaintiffs. I mean, what sense would that make? The governor saying, no, it should be just that these plaintiffs that don't have to wear masks. Really? Are you really going that route, really? What are they supposed to do? Just like, whenever they're challenged in a restaurant or something like that, they reach in and they grab their this court decision. See, that's my name. The court held that the CDC acted illegally, but it only applies to me, and they can act illegally toward everybody else. It's just amazing. Who are these people? Well, they're clearly graduates of Democrat-run law schools, which is 90% of law schools. If that doesn't frighten you, I don't know what does. They're a bunch of grade inflated kids, basically. Additionally, the recognized exceptions to vacatur for APA violations does not apply here. In deciding whether to award less than vacatur relief, courts frequently consider the seriousness of the order's deficiencies and thus the extent of doubt whether the agency chose correctly and Two, the disruptive consequences of an interim change that may itself be ch changed. Here, the CDC cannot correct the serious deficiencies on remand, nor is the mask mandate a rule necessitating a significant administrative wind-down period. And of course, the government never asked for remand to the CDC without vacatur. While the court re recognizes the criticism about nationwide injunctive relief and admittedly shares some of the skepticism about it, the weight of authority and judicial practice instructs that vacatur is an appropriate remedy. Wow. The government, aside from a single sentence in its response, does not brief the propriety of vacatur, nor does it address whether an injunction, which is often entered on a preliminary posture, and vacatur, which follows final judgment, are comparable. I'm skipping, I skip some of it because there's a lot of citations and I don't read all that. So probably about 20% of each page, sometimes 25%. I'm not reading, I'm skipping over just be I'm getting back to when she picks up after that. There's another independent reason supporting vacatur. Such relief is necessary to grant complete relief to plaintiffs. Whatever doubts surround nationwide injunctive relief in general, there's no doubt that an Article III court may administer complete relief between the parties, even if this involves the determination of legal rights, which otherwise would not be within the range of its authority. Yeah. There's an interesting question about the proper role of courts, and she's paying attention to separation of powers. She's saying, hey, this is a proper role of an Article III court to grant complete relief to the party that wins. And to do that, I have to strike down the entire rule for the whole country. And that's within the separation of powers. I'm not stepping outside of my role as an Article III judge to do that. The rule was promulgated in an arbitrary, capricious fashion. That's enough to strike it down. Stated simply, incidental benefit to non-parties does not deprive Article III courts of exercising their historic power of equity to provide complete relief to the plaintiffs before it. Yeah, because why would that be? Because if a plaintiff now is stopped for not wearing a mask, that's not complete relief. They still have to deal with the hassle of proving that they particularly don't have to. The only way to get rid of that is to strike it down for the whole country so, such that they will never be stopped for not wearing a mask. And awarding complete relief here requires vacatur. The d difficulty of distinguishing the named plaintiffs from millions of other travelers, both for government actors and myriad of private companies, individuals, local governments, bound to enforce the mandate with best efforts, mo almost ensures that a limited remedy would be no remedy at all. How is the ride-sharing driver, flight attendant, or bus driver to know someone is a plaintiff to this lawsuit with permission to enter mask-free? The identification problem is compounded further for the geographically dispersed members of Health Freedom Defense Fund. There seems to be no adequate assurances that the government can provide its agents or its unwitting enforcer will not violate the court's order and deprive plaintiffs of their relief. Thus, complete vacatur, in addition to being an ordinary APA remedy, is necessary to remedy plaintiff's injury. Conclusion: it is indisputable that the public has a strong interest in combating the spread of COVID-19. In pursuit of that end, CDC issues a mask mandate, but the mandate exceeded the CDC's statutory authority. See, a government agency cannot exceed its statutory authority granted by Congress signed by the president by presentment or overridden in a veto. Separation of powers protects individual liberty. The mandate exceeded the CDC's statutory authority, improperly invoked the good cause exception to notice and comment rulemaking, failed to adequately explain its decisions because our system does not permit agencies to act unlawfully, even in the pursuit of desirable ends. The court declares unlawful and vacates the mask mandate. Accordingly, the following is ordered. Plaintiff's motion for summary judgment is granted, and the court declares unlawful and vacates the mask mandate. The court directs the clerk to terminate. Wow. Isn't that fun? Ordered in Tampa, Florida, April 18th, 2022. Catherine Kimball Mizell, United States District Judge, appointed by President Trump, confirmed by a Republican United States Senate. Thank you for joining me on the Republican Professor podcast. It really helps if you support the podcast. Keep us going. Donate at the Republican Professor on Venmo, at the Republican Professor on Venmo. And we'd love to have your support. It does cost money to do this, and it's necessary for the future of our country to have people doing work like this. Take care. This is Friday, October 18th, 2024, years after Jesus.